Welcome to this week's episode of the American Serial Killer Guidebook with your intrepid hosts, Elton and Cherish Morgan.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the American Serial Killer Guidebook. I'm your host, Elton Morgan.
I'm your co-host, Cherish Morgan.
And we're the Morgans. Thanks for joining us this week, guys. We're going to be covering a serial killer duo this week. They're known as the Sex Slave Killers. It's Gerald and Charlene Gallego. Boy, these two really had something going. What they like to do is Gerald and Charlene would go out and go on the hunt. And he would wait in the van. Charlene would go out and find a couple of young girls. Tell them, hey, we've got some work for you. Or, hey, would you like to smoke a little weed? Come back to the van with me, you know. And then whenever they'd get in the van, it was all over. That's whenever Gerald Gallego would rape and murder these poor girls, take them out to the country, ditch their bodies. Their main hunting ground was Sacramento, California, back in 78 to 1980. And they ended up killing 10 people. 9 women, or young, some of them were young girls, and a man. And he usually liked to beat them to death. But one of them, he just shot him outright. And unfortunately, some of these young ladies were teens. One of them was even pregnant. So make sure to stay tuned and find out all of the gory graphic details. But make sure to stop by and visit us on our website, taskg.net. And you can look in the episode summary, you can buy us a coffee, you can go to Patreon, or you can support us on some of the other links that we have available there for you. Make sure whenever you go to our website, check out our store. It's got some of the best serial killer gear. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, onesies. We've got pretty much everything you could want with every serial killer who's ever existed. From H.H. Holmes to BTK to the Night Stalker to really everybody. So,
yeah. So if you're into that type of stuff, go check it out.
Yeah. And we know you're into it because if you weren't, you wouldn't be listening to
exactly.
us right now. You freak. No, I'm just kidding. That makes us freaks. All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and get this intro out of the way and make sure to stay tuned to the rest of the episode so you can get all the nasty, gory details. Thanks, guys. Gerald Gallego never met his dad, but it's said that he inherited his dad's temper. His dad, Gerald Sr., was serving time in San Quentin when Gerald was born in 1946, and when he got out on parole, he went straight back to his life of crime, right back to prison. The next time he was paroled, he took off from California, landing in Mississippi, and about 9 years later, in mid-1950s, he ended up being the first man to die in Mississippi's gas chamber. Yeah, that's a hell of a thing for your dad to be famous for.
Yeah, no kidding.
He was condemned for killing 2 police officers. And Gerald Jr., he didn't know that his dad was executed when he was young. His mom told him that he had died accidentally. But obviously, you know, the apple didn't fall far from the tree because Gerald Jr. started racking up his own arrests before the year was out. And his mom, she was no stranger to a life of crime either. He'd been raised with extended family, and his family was made up of murderers, child molesters, all kinds. If there was a type of criminal, it was a member of his family.
Wow.
Yeah. And his mom was Lorraine Pullen Bennett Gallego, and she was a Sacramento prostitute on Skid Row. And when Gerald was little, she had him running errands for pimps and doing a bunch of other, you know, little illegal things, running numbers, doing other little crimes. So he was introduced at a very young age. And by the time he was six, he already had burglary and sex offense charges on his record. And by the time he was 12, he was on juvenile probation for burglary. And he was later charged with raping a six-year-old neighbor girl, resulting in him being placed in a boys' school in 1959.
He started early, didn't he?
Yeah, the sex offenses. So usually when stuff like that happens, it's because those types of crimes were perpetrated on them.
Yeah.
So having a prostitute for a mom and, you know, being raised around pimps and other street criminals and more than likely other prostitutes, he was seeing sex on a regular basis.
Yeah,
you know,
that's all he knew.
Right. And these people, definitely not people of integrity and high moral standing. So they were probably molesting him.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Which traumatized him. So, I mean, when you get sex offense charges at 6 years old, you must be severely traumatized.
Yeah.
To start trying to perpetrate or even think about these types of things at six.
Yeah.
And then by 12, he was raping six-year-olds.
Yeah. Well, kids only do what they see.
Yeah.
What they're taught.
Yeah. They mimic the behavior that's perpetrated on them.
Yeah.
Whew, man, this guy, I mean, I know he's a serial killer. I know he's a sex offender and all this stuff, but you can't help feel bad for a child that is subjected to this type of abuse.
Plus, he was predisposed, if it even works like that, to have that type of mental illness to want to go out and hurt people.
From both his mother and his father.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
In the summer of 1961, Gerald was paroled. And this is Gerald Jr. after being in boys' school. And it didn't even take a year. And him and his half-brother, David Hunt, were arrested for armed robbery and sentenced to the Preston School of Industry in Lone, California. But Gerald escaped shortly after starting a sentence, but he eventually turned himself in and had to do a couple more years, and they paroled him in 1963. By the time he was 32, he'd been married seven times, and two of these times were to the same woman. And on top of this, he had been engaged in bigamy with multiple other women and had even collected an impressive seven felony convictions by this time.
Without going to prison?
No. This is by the time he was 32. Yeah. All of the marriages and the bigamy and stuff.
He went to prison before he started getting married.
Right. But he had, over time, by the time he was 32, he had collected seven felony convictions.
Wow.
Yeah. And he had outstanding warrants for incest, rape, sodomy. I mean, the guy was a monster. Hmm. So in around Christmas of 1963, he married his first wife. He was 16. She was 21 years old. So what does that tell you about the quality of the woman? Right. And then in spring of 1964, in April, his first child, Krista, was born. But him and his wife, the marriage didn't last long.
I don't believe it.
Yeah. And somehow he ended up getting custody of his daughter and he sent his daughter to live with his mom.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. On the 12th of July in 1966, he got married again. And this time it was to a waitress. She was 24 years old from West Sacramento. But this marriage only lasted 26 days because, you know, of course, Gerald liked physically abusing, beating the hell out of his wife, you know, attacking her with weapons, things like that. So it didn't even take her a month. And she was like, nope, I'm done. I'm out. He got married again to his third wife, who was a laundry worker, on the 14th of October in 1967. This marriage only lasted a month because, once again, he liked to beat the hell out of his women. Jeez Louise, man. His fourth marriage, 2 years later, was in Reno, and he married a 19-year-old girl named Harriet, and she was pregnant whenever they decided to get divorced, which, once again, less than a month. And Harriet's family hated Gerald. They referred to him as Jekyll and Hyde. And to this very day, his daughter does not know that he is the father.
Probably for the best.
Yeah, because knowing that your dad was executed or a dead serial killer, that's going to fuck with your head.
Yeah.
Okay, that was his fourth marriage. They all tend to last less than a month. All right? March of 69. On October 25th of 69, Gerald and his half-brother David got arrested again for armed robbery, this time of a Vacaville, California motel, and they escaped shortly after they were arrested with another inmate from the Solano County Jail, but they only stayed on the run for 4 days, and he received 5 years in prison for that robbery. So he's sitting in prison for this time, and then he ended up getting out in 1974. Well, October 5th of 74, he decided to get married a fifth time in Butte County to a 19-year-old laundry worker.
You already said that.
No. This is another laundry worker. I guess he figured, you know, wife number three, wife number five, the first one worked out so well, so we might as well get another one. Yeah. So this is his fifth wife. She was also a laundry worker. She was 19 years old. He ended up discharging his parole a little over a year later in December of 1975. But in August of 77, his wife and he, his fifth wife number five, decided to separate. I'm pretty sure it was more her decision. Separating. Yeah, her decision than his. That's whenever Gerald and Charlene met at this poker bar in Sacramento in September of 77. So this is just the month after he separated from his fifth wife. And in an interview, Charlene said, "I thought he was very nice, clean-cut fellow." And Gerald liked the fact that she was, you know, petite, she had blonde hair, and that tend to fit into his type, I guess. Well, within a couple of days, he started wooing her. You know, he sent her a dozen roses with a card, and that card read, "To a very sweet girl." And then with a few weeks, they were living together. But as soon as they moved in, he started, "This is how things are going to be. I'm the man, you're the woman, listen to what I got to fucking say."
Yeah.
Right? So he could be charming when he was first starting to try to date them or try to, you know, mix it up a little. Mm-hmm. But as soon as he got them, you know, as soon as he got them in his trap and they were moving in together and he had her in a house and she had nowhere to go, that's when the walls came down. That's when the door slammed shut. That's when it was like, "I own you now. You're fucking mine. And if you don't do what I say, you're going to pay the price."
Yeah. Well, obviously that didn't work the last four, so.
Yeah. And they lasted less than a month. Yeah. But that's why I think this relationship lasted so long, because she was willing to submit to him.
Yeah. She was very submissive.
Yeah. And a lot of abusers do this type of thing. They try to make you completely helpless and fully dependent on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, they won't give you a car. They won't let you work. They won't give you access to money. They won't even give you access to a telephone. They try to keep you 100% cut off from everybody.
Yeah.
But, you know, even though he was the one who was running the show, Charlene was the one who was working. She was the primary breadwinner, but he had her turning that paycheck over every week. And she was a clerk at a supermarket. You know, he told her what to wear, how to keep his, you know, extracurricular activities with other women a secret. You know, he was with her, but he was still going to do what he wanted, and she was going to deal with it.
Yeah.
I can't imagine being in a situation like that. But even with all the abuse, Charlene was still taken with him. Because her two previous husbands, apparently they were just super boring. They were nice guys. They, you know, nice guys finish last. And she found Gerald super dynamic, super exciting. You know, he kept things fresh. She liked the abuse, I guess. And
he was the bad boy.
Yeah, he was the bad boy. Girls, some women like that. And he started talking to her about his fantasies. And in them, he told her he wanted to have some young sex slaves, females that, you know, he could just use them and toss them out. And she liked the idea. It was dark. It was exciting. And it kind of gave her a thrill. You know, this is a far cry from the domesticated, boring life that she had with her two prior husbands. You know, to go to work, come home, fix dinner, go to bed, you know, day in, day out. She was getting abused. She was working. This guy was talking about raping and kidnapping people, murdering people. I mean, this is just like she was on this high.
Yeah.
Well, nobody knows why, but I mean, Charlene just completely went nuts for Gerald. And she was like, accepted all of his craziness. And she started to agree to his fantasies. And
she wanted to do anything she could to keep him happy.
Yeah. You know, and he wanted to build this secret hideout where he could keep his sex slaves hostage and force them to do everything he wanted until he was done with them. And I mean, Charlene was not born into the same type of lifestyle that he was. She came from a good, decent, middle-class family.
She was an only child.
Yeah. She was born in 1956. Her parents were Charles and Mercedes Williams. Her dad had worked his way up in the grocery business from a supermarket butcher to an executive with a national grocery chain. I mean, he was a successful businessman. Mm-hmm. She was an only child, like you said, grew up in Arden Park in an upper middle class suburb of Sacramento. And when she was in school, she was considered gifted and talented. They measured her IQ at 160, and she was considered a violin prodigy. That's why nobody could understand why. I mean, Gerald was the antithesis of her entire life up to that point. He was the exact opposite of everything. She felt like she grew up vanilla, middle class, boring, focused on school, good grades, played the violin, and that was just driving her nuts. The pressure from her family to excel and everything, and she rebelled in a drastic, drastic way. Oh my God. And she did really well up until high school, which that's when she started the drugs, the alcohol, the sex, you know, with boys and stuff. And she barely managed to graduate. She flunked out of college. She had two failed marriages all within a very short period of time. And although a lot of young women out there, they engage in teenage rebellion. Our kids engaged in teenage rebellion, sometimes drastically.
Yes.
Right. But most people don't fall into this pit of sexual sadism and go to the drastic levels that she did for a man who was obviously a bad person. I mean, her dad was a successful businessman. She was a decent upper middle class suburban girl with a bright future, and she hated every bit of it.
Yeah.
Along comes this bad boy, like you said, exciting, flaunting the rules, willing to live by his own rules, to do what he wanted. He didn't care what society thought, and she was just blown away by it. And unfortunately, that happens a lot more than most people think. Any father out there who has a daughter who has been a teenager knows that the daughter will rebel against the parents. She will date a boy that the parents hate because he's a bad boy, because he's the type of person that the parents don't like. So that's what draws the girl to them.
Yeah.
It's the same way with you and me. Your parents hated my guts.
Yeah.
And it kind of pushed you to me. This is 150 years ago, but you know, I was the long-haired metalhead. Then your parents didn't like that. Mm-mm. I was going nowhere, blah, blah, blah. And here we've been married 792 years. On September 11th of 1978, Gerald finally made the decision. He was like, okay, no more fantasy. No more fantasy. It's time to put these plans into action. We are going to do all of the stuff that we discussed. And he woke Charlene up. She was a couple months pregnant. She was having morning sickness. And he told her, he's like, this is what I want to do. This is the plan. I want you to help me. So they drove to Sacramento Country Club Plaza Shopping Center in their old beat up 1973 Dodge conversion van. And it was one of those cool vans that you see like on Scooby-Doo or like those old 70s movies. And it had the mountains painted on the side of the van, you know, like the hippie vans from the 70s.
Carpeted,
you know?
Inside.
Yeah, you know, yeah. People lived in those fucking vans. Yeah, and
little
shit.
Round window on the side.
Right, right. The porthole. Yeah. And he told Charlene, he said, I want you to locate two slaves. And by that, he meant sex slaves. And I want you to lure them out here to the parking lot, get them to the van. However you could do it, get them here. And at first she was like, I don't want to do it. I'm scared. I'm not going to be able to do this. I'm not going to be able to get anybody to come, or I'm going to get caught, you know? And he's like, you're fucking taking too long. Just focus and do what I tell you to do. If you know what's good for you, you're going to do what the hell I tell you to do, and you're going to do it right goddamn now. So she did what he said. So she went out, and it didn't take her long. She found two pretty young ladies, Rhonda Scheffler, who was 17, and Kippy Vaught, who was 16. They were out shopping and looking to have some fun. And Charlene, you know, she looked like she was close to their age. So she walked up to him. She's like, hey, you guys want to smoke some weed? And they're like, hey, that sounds like fun. You know, they were out looking for adventure. They were out looking for something to do. So they're like, hell yeah. So they followed her out to the parking lot, and she opened the van. But as soon as she opened the door, what's the first thing they see? They see Gerald sitting there with a 25 caliber pistol pointed at him. Right. They're like, whoa, you know, and he's like, get your ass in this van right fucking now, or I'm going to blow your head off. So he gets him in the van. He binds him up with tape, and he tells Charlene, get in here. You watch him. And then he jumped in the van, drove off. So they're headed east down I-80 toward the Sierra Nevada mountains. Right. And once they get to Baxter, California, he pulls off the interstate, and Gerald takes him way out in the middle of nowhere into the foothills. And he finally found a spot that he liked, and he parked, opened the door, pulled the girls out at gunpoint, grabbed a sleeping bag, told Charlene, hey, you wait here with the fucking van. I'll be back when I get back. A few hours later, Gerald came back to the van. He didn't have either girls with him. And Charlene's like, where are the girls? He looked at her and he's like, ask me no questions. I'll tell you no lies. And then he's like, take the van into Sacramento and visit some friends to establish an alibi. And so Charlene's like, okay.
So he stayed with the girls?
Yeah, he stayed out there in the boonies. So she left him. She went into Sacramento, hung out with some people, and when she came back the next day, Gerald had the girls with him. He was sitting there waiting. So he's out in the woods out in the foothills with these two young girls, poor girls, raping the shit out of them over and over again all night long. And where they could probably scream their heads off and nobody would hear them, miles from anywhere.
Ugh. I don't know how he kept them contained, you know, without one of them running off. Or
he had a pistol.
Well, yeah.
I mean, all he had to say was, you know, you move, I'll fucking kill you.
Yeah.
And I'll bury you here in the woods and your parents will never find you. I mean, you say something like that to somebody, they're going to be terrified.
Yeah.
So once Charlene came back, he told the girls get in the back of the van, and he sat back there with them. He told Charlene to drive to Slough House, California, where once they got there, he pulled the girls out of the van. He told them to walk through this field. And then once they got there, he told them to get down into this ditch. And that's where he pulled out a tire iron and he hit Kippy with it. And he swung around and hit Rhonda with it. Knocked them down. They're laying there. They're bleeding. They're hurt. It's when he pulled out his pistol, the 25 caliber pistol, and he shot them both in the head, one at a time. But as he was walking back, unfortunately, he saw one of the girls move. And it turned out it was Kippy Vaught. And he thought he'd killed her. If she wouldn't have moved, she would have survived. Because when it caused him to go back and take another look.
Yeah.
And that's when he noticed that the bullet had only grazed her. It didn't penetrate. So that's when he bent down, aimed a gun, and he shot her three more times in the head. This time he killed her.
Oh my God.
Yeah. On the 13th of September in 78, two migrant farm workers were out there and they discovered the girls' bodies. And it was only 2 days after they disappeared. And it was around the same time that Gerald decided he didn't want to be a dad. So he took Charlene to an abortion clinic and he forced her to have an abortion. Just a short time later, on the 27th of September, Gerald's daughter, Krista, that he had sent to live with his mother, she's the one who filed charges of incest, sodomy, oral copulation, and unlawful intercourse against Gerald. So that means that all these years that once he got custody of her,
mm-hmm.
and she went to go live with his mother, every time he'd come over, he was raping his own daughter.
It's fucking sick.
Right. Incest and sodomy is anal penetration. Oral copulation is, of course, forced oral sex and unlawful intercourse. So he was going the full round with this poor kid. This is his own kid at that. Yeah. 3 days later, on September 30th of 78, Gerald and Charlene decided they were going to get married.
Oh, that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, this is marriage number six. So he wasn't ready to, he didn't want to hang around and have to face his daughter's charges. He didn't want to have to answer any questions. He didn't want to have to deal with the police. And that's when they decided it was time to haul ass. And having gotten married in Reno, they decided, fuck it, we're out. We're leaving California until the heat from the murder charges or the murder investigation and his daughter's charges. Because, see, they didn't know who had killed the girls just yet, but the investigation was going hot.
Yeah.
Well, since his daughter had filed those charges, he decided it was best to just get the fuck out of there. Just haul ass. So, and Charlene's parents, you know, they didn't want to see their daughter, you know. The family had a good name. You know, her parents had a good family name. And she had a good name.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to see their family name disgraced by their new son-in-law getting publicly arrested.
Right.
For molesting his daughter. At the time, they only knew about the molestation and sodomy and incest.
Right.
Well, they decided to step in and help him out. I don't know how someone could step in and help their son-in-law who was on the run for raping his own daughter. How could you allow that person to stay with your daughter?
It just rich people do stupid things to keep their name out of the
doesn't make any fucking sense.
Headlines.
Yeah, so Charles and Mercedes Williams, Charlene's parents, stepped in to help him out. They told Charlene to steal her cousin's birth certificate. And that's when they helped Gerald get a fake driver's license and some other documents in the name of Stephen Robert Fail. Then her dad, Charles Williams, used his pull with his business contacts to get Gerald a job driving a truck for a supermarket in Houston. Remember, he was an executive for a supermarket company. Mm-hmm. So not only did they give him some money, they helped him get fake identities, and hooked him up with a job. But Gerald, it wasn't enough. He got bored. He didn't like that. He didn't like living a lawful, normal life, even though he was on the run. Mm-hmm. He was willing to risk his freedom to go back out and start pulling his bullshit again.
Yeah.
So even though her parents went out of their way to help them. By the following spring, they were back in Reno. And things were kind of normal for a while. You know, Gerald tried to work as a driver for a meat distributor. Charlene was working in an office for another distributor. But by June of 79, Gerald couldn't take it. He left his job. He was getting really restless. And he started plotting and planning again. He's like, oh, I need to get me some new sex slaves. And I need to get them now. Because I guess he was, you know, raping and murdering those girls only held him over for so long. Because when people start doing stuff like this, it satisfies them for a while. But then the craving comes back, and it comes back twice as strong.
Right.
And then the period in between murders and rapes gets shorter and shorter because the satisfaction lasts less. You know, you become desensitized to it. It's like a heroin addict. You know, at first you may do it on the weekends, and then you start doing it more and more often. You start doing more and more, yeah. You know, because you're trying to get that same high.
Well, it is kind of an addiction.
Yeah, it's a high.
Yeah.
So he's plotting and planning. He's like, where can I get some more girls? So that's when he decides, hey, best place to get them, Washoe County Fair. So on the 24th of June, 1979, a 14-year-old girl named Brenda Judd, her 13-year-old friend Sandra Colley, they were headed out of the fairgrounds. They were on their way home. They were almost gone. And that's when Charlene walked up and stopped them. She said she needed some help passing out leaflets in the parking lot. She said, you know, would you be interested, make a little extra money? They were like, yeah, sure, why not? And she's like, well, I need to get some more out of the van. Can you come with me to the van? We'll get them. I'll hand them to you, pass them out, make a little cashola. Well, they get to the van. They get in the van. Once again, Gerald's in there waiting, holding a gun on them, tells them, get their fucking ass in the van or I'll blow your head off. Mm-hmm. He binds the girls up again. This time they take off. They're headed for I-80. And on the highway, he decides to stop at a hardware store. This time he comes out of the hardware store with a hammer and a shovel. I guess he's got different plans,
yeah.
You know. So he gets back in. He starts heading east on I-80 toward Mustang. And after a while, he's like, Charlene, he pulls over to like, Charlene, you need to get up here and drive while I get in the back. And while she's driving, he's in the back of the van raping these two girls. And Charlene's watching her husband rape two teenage girls in the back of the van through the rearview mirror. And so she finally parks the van out in the middle of nowhere by a place called Humboldt Sink. Over the next couple hours, Gerald would sit back and rest from all the raping, and he would watch Charlene, who got off on forcing the girls to perform sex acts on each other. I mean, the humiliation and the downright freaking trauma that these people are inflicting on these girls, it's not bad enough that he's raping them. But a woman forces them to molest each other.
Yeah.
The humiliation just doesn't stop. It's, I think it's equal parts physical and equal parts psychological, that the torture that he enjoys getting from these people.
Yeah.
I mean, the pain he enjoys I think because he was abused, he was humiliated, you know, he was taken advantage of. He enjoys forcing that same pain on other people. Oh, I don't know, boy, this guy just gets to me. Okay, so once they get done doing that, you know, Gerald's like, he reaches under the seat in their van. He pulls the shovel out and he tells, you know, Collie to get out of the vehicle. He starts walking her towards his dry creek bed. And he walked up behind her, boom, swung the shovel. And in an interview, Charlene said that it sounded like a loud splat, like a flat rock hitting mud. And then the girl dropped to her knees and she just fell over right on her face. Okay, then Gerald ended up beating her friend Judd to death. He dug a deep hole, he folded their bodies into it, and he covered it up, and he threw a rock over the top of their grave. This guy's something else, man.
Fucking sick.
I mean, of all the people we've interviewed, I'd say that this guy is probably one of the top two or three.
Yeah.
So Charlene cleans the van. They head back to Reno the next day. But Gerald decides he's going to keep his hammer and shovel. You know, he's going to keep his trophies. So Brenda and Sandra, the two girls that had just been killed, they were reported missing. But the authorities were confused because there were two other girls who had ran away to join the carnival. And they were running rides on the Midway. So it took a while for them to realize that the two girls that were reported missing were not the two that had run away to join the fair. Right? So once those girls were found, then the cops were able to focus on the fact, okay, we still have two legitimately missing young ladies. Yeah. Yes. And once they got that cleared up, that's when they started their investigation, but it didn't go very far. I mean, they didn't have anything to go on other than, you know, missing persons report and interview a few people without any evidence, any leads to point the way. I mean, there wasn't, you got to think this is in fucking 70s. This is 1979. There really wasn't a lot of technology or anything.
Yeah. Plus they were late getting started.
Yeah.
So
Gerald and Charlene, okay, things are cool. Yeah, I mean, the cops are fucking idiots. They don't know what's going on, so we've got time. You know, they felt safe. And they returned to Reno. Or they left Reno to go to Sacramento within a couple months. And the teenagers were just were listed as missing persons. So, I mean, they didn't have anything to worry about, you know, for 4 years. Nobody even knew that they had been murdered. Okay, they were just listed as runaways and missing persons for 4 years.
Yeah.
Until after being arrested, Charlene confessed to their murders, you know, in her trial in 1982. And that's when the police and their families found out, okay, they weren't runaways. They were actually killed. Mm-hmm. So if she wouldn't have confessed to their murders, they would still be listed as runaways. And this is in 82 that she confessed to it. They didn't even find their fucking bodies until November of 99.
Damn.
Yeah. And it was by a tractor operator who was out there plowing and shit.
Yeah.
He found the bodies. If he wouldn't have done that, they would have never found them. So in September of 79, Charlene and Gerald, they moved back to Sacramento and they were still using the aliases of Mr. and Mrs. Fail. That her parents had helped set up for them, and they had gotten married under those names. Gerald got a job as a bartender, and, you know, with his high sex drive and his lack of integrity, he was soon having another affair with a young lady named Patty, who ended up getting pregnant, but she didn't tell Gerald. So 6 months later, 8 months later, 7 months later, on the 24th of April, 1980, Gerald, once again, he was fond of waking Charlene up, and he said, "I want a girl. Get up." He needed him a slave right then. I mean, he couldn't just roll his wife over and say, you know, "Hey, I need to get a little," or whatever it is that you say. He demanded that she wake up and go get him a slave, go kidnap someone. So after driving around for a while, he spotted a young lady named Carol Chapman Twigg. She was 17 years old. And her friend, Stacy Ann Redican, who was also 17 years old. They were coming out of a bookstore. So Charlene walks up to them and, you know, she's like, "Hey, you guys want to come smoke some weed with me in my van?" And the girls are like, "Hell yeah." Apparently that was a big thing in the 80s. I mean, I guess it was common for people to invite other people to smoke pot with them and shit.
Yeah. Know?
So, you know, they're like, "Hell yeah, we'll do it." So they ended up getting in the vehicle and there's Gerald. Except this time, as soon as she opens the door, he's got a 357 Magnum pointed at him. Tells him to get in, same story. Get in, make Charlene drive. But from what Charlene said, the girls, I don't know if it's because they were a little older or what, but they were more curious than they were scared. And it's like they thought this was some sort of a game and like, you know, these are grownups. They're playing with us. We're just going to see how this game plays out. You know, maybe it's a joke.
Yeah.
But it didn't take long for them to realize it wasn't. Once again, Charlene's headed east on I-80. Gerald crawls in the back. He starts raping these girls. I'm pretty sure that's when they realized it was not a game. And every so often, he, you know, yells some directions to Charlene. And this time, they ended up at a place called Limerick Canyon, and it's near Lovelock. And just like he did before, he got the girls out of the van one at a time. And this time, he would pull one out. He'd walk her a little ways off. He'd bash her head in with a hammer. He came back for the other one, walked her out, bashed her head in with a hammer. This time, you know, unlike last time where he just took the girls out, finished them, and then got in the van, he made Charlene go look at the graves. All right, he pulled her out and told her to look. And she says that she saw some movement, and when she told Gerald, he's like, no, 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 that's not possible. These girls are good and dead. But remember, last time he kept his hammer, he kept his shovel. But this time Charlene's like, no, you got to get rid of this hammer. So as they're cruising down the highway, headed back to Sacramento, she tosses it out the window. She's like, no, we got to get rid of this fucking thing. And just a few months later, 3 months later, on 27th July of 1980, there were some people that were having a picnic and they saw something that a coyote had tore up. And whenever they went over to look at it, they what they were looking at was Karen and Stacy's remains. The coyotes had dug up their shallow grave and were pulling their body parts and decomposed body and stuff out. And they found them in those shallow graves, and it was about 20 miles outside of Lovelock, Nevada. And when they did the autopsies, I don't know how they could still tell, you know, this late in the game, but they could tell they had both been raped and they had died from massive head injuries with a blunt instrument. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of part one of our episode covering Gerald and Charlene Gallegos, the sex slave killers. Make sure to check out our next episode, part two, to find out exactly what happens next. And trust me, you're not going to want to miss it, because if you think what you've heard so far is depraved, if you think it's disgusting, if you think it's vicious and soulless, baby, you ain't seen nothing yet. In the next episode, part two, we're going to go even further down this rabbit hole. So make sure, like we said before, check out our website, taskg.net. If you have any story ideas, you want us to mention you on an episode, you want any topics that you'd like us to discuss, make sure to email us at Elton, E-L-T-O-N, at taskg.net, or Cherish at taskg.net. Make sure to visit our store for all your favorite serial killer gear, and stop by the episode description so you can help support the show, Patreon, buy us a cup of coffee, or any of our other links. And we want to say thank you, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us this week on the American Serial Killer Guidebook. Be sure to subscribe. Visit us at taskg.net. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And join us next week for another exciting episode filled with murder and mayhem.